Now, recognize it has been a very busy weekend for most, and we appreciate all who have taken time and made the effort to be present tonight at the meeting. You're all very welcome in the Lord's name, and we look to him for his help and blessing. Now, I'd like to read quite a number of verses, but they'll all be found in the book of Numbers and chapter 11. The book of Numbers and chapter 11. Verse 1 of Numbers chapter 11. And when the people complained, it displeased the Lord, and the Lord heard it, and his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them, and consumed them that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. Verse 4, and the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting, and the children of Israel also wept again, and said, Who shall give us flesh to eat? We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers, and the melons, and the leeks, and the onions, and the garlic. But now our soul is dried away, there is nothing at all beside this manna before our eyes. And the manna was as coriander seed, and the colour thereof as the colour of bdellium. Verse 10. Then Moses heard the people weep throughout their families, every man in the door of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. And Moses also was displeased. And Moses said unto the Lord, Wherefore hast thou afflicted thy servant? And wherefore have I not found favour in thy sight, that thou layest the burden of all this people upon me? Have I conceived all this people? Have I begotten them? That thou shouldst say unto me, Carry them in thy bosom, as a nursing father beareth a sucking child, unto the land which thou swearest unto their fathers. Whence should I have flesh to give unto all this people? For they weep unto me, saying, Give us flesh, that we may. I am not able to bear all this people alone, because it is too heavy for me. And if thou deal thus with me, kill me, I pray thee, out of hand, if I have found favour in thy sight, and let me not see my wretchedness. And the Lord said unto Moses, Gather unto me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom thou knowest to be the elders of the people, and officers over them, and bring them unto the tabernacle of the congregation, that they may stand there with thee. And I will come down and talk with thee there, and I will take of the Spirit which is upon thee, and will put it upon them. And they shall bear the burden of the people with thee, that thou bear it not thyself alone. Verse 21, And Moses said, The people among whom I am are 600,000 footmen, and thou hast said, I will give them flesh, that they may eat a whole month. Shall the flocks and the herds be slain for them to suffice them, or shall all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them to suffice them? And the Lord said unto Moses, Is the Lord's hand waxed short? Thou shalt see now whether my word shall come to pass unto thee or not. And then we have the Spirit coming, verse 25. The Lord came down in a cloud, spake unto him, took of the Spirit that was upon him, gave it unto the 70 elders. Came to pass that when the Spirit rested upon them, they prophesied and did not cease, or they prophesied and did not do it again. It was a one-off. Verse 26, But there remained two of the men in the camp. The name of the one was Eldad, and the name of the other Medad. And the Spirit rested upon them, and they were of them that were written, but went not out unto the tabernacle. And they prophesied in the camp. And there ran a young man, and told Moses, and said, Eldad and Medad do prophesy in the camp. And Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of Moses, one of his young men, answered and said, My Lord Moses, forbid them. Moses said unto him, Enviest thou for my sake? Would God that all the Lord's people were prophets, and that the Lord would put his Spirit upon them. And Moses got him into the camp, he and the elders of Israel. And I think we'll make do with reading. Just terminate the reading there. We trust with the Lord's blessing. There's an unusual word in the English language. Some of you may be familiar with it. Some of the younger folks in your English studies, you may have come across the word bowdlerizing. B-O-W. B-O-W-L-D-E-R-I-S-E, bowdlerizing. It's a word that has to do with the editing of material. It takes its rise from a man, a gentleman called Thomas Bowdler. He lived back maybe in the 16th century or something like that. He was a physician by profession, a man of independent means, and he had quite a wide range of interests. One of the projects that he undertook was to edit the works of William Shakespeare, and everything in Shakespeare's works which he thought was unacceptable or a little bit uncouth or a little bit irreverent or a little bit nasty. He edited it out, and he published a new edition, a domesticated edition of William Shakespeare that was supposed to be usable for family readings and even children and so on. So that it became known as Bowdler's Shakespeare, the edited Shakespeare with all the nasty pieces removed. Then, as time went on, if any book was edited, or if any biography was published, out of which all the uncomfortable parts had been expurgated, it was said that that particular book had suffered from bowdlerizing, and the awkward pieces had been taken away. There's one thing I'm sure about. There's no bowdlerizing in the Bible. You know, when God gives to us a portrait of some of the greatest heroes, in the portrait, we are allowed to see their weaknesses as well as their greatnesses. We are allowed to see the warts as well as the virtues. And what I want to speak about in the few nights that are before us and tonight, I want to speak about a number of men in Scripture whom the Lord described as my servant, or who described themselves as thy servant. Notable men, remarkable men of weight and men of worth, men the mention of whose name commands respect in the minds of people that love the Bible. And yet, these great servants of the Lord that we will look at, there was a day in their life when they seemed to suffer a collapse. You know, Mr. Spurgeon, he wrote a book called Lectures to My Students. In that book, there's a compilation of messages which Mr. Spurgeon delivered on Friday afternoons to some of the students that were associated with his college and so on. One of the chapters in the book, one of the lectures which he gave, is entitled The Minister's Fainting Fit. Mr. Spurgeon counseled his young men to recognize that in the work of the Lord, there would be times that the difficulties would be so enormous, there was a likelihood that the servant would faint. The minister's fainting fits, and we'll be examining here tonight some of these fainting fits that, first of all, in the life of Moses, and then we'll mention others as the nights go on. Have you ever felt like giving up? In whatever work you do for the Lord, have you ever reached an impasse where you were so discouraged and you had so caved in internally that you were just about to throw in the towel? And you reached a point where you felt that there's no use continuing. I simply cannot take any more. I've had enough. I'm going to stop. And you just wanted God to take your resignation. And psychologically, and emotionally, and spiritually, you had become limp. You had fainted. Well, that's the kind of thing that I'll be talking about. And here tonight we have a man, one of the greatest leaders, great leader, marching out the head of the great company as he brought them out of Egypt. When it comes to leadership, we can hardly think of a character more sterling or more sturdy than this great man Moses. And yet he reaches a point in Numbers chapter 12 where he is so discouraged and the pressure has become so great that he says to God, "Tell me." And he says, "Do it now." He says, "Kill me out of hand." As we would say, maybe in Irish or in English, "Kill me outright." He said, "I don't even want to live another day." And he says, "If I have found favor in your sight," he says, "kill me." He says, "The best favor that you could do for me, Lord, today is to kill me." He said, "If you let me live, you'll be doing me a disservice." He said, "This whole business has become so burdensome and so black." He said, "The only favor that you can do that will in any way give me blessing and relief is to kill me so that I'll be relieved from the whole." He was far down. He was far through. It wasn't that his death wish was suicidal. I'm not saying that. But his death wish and his death request that the Lord would kill him. Well, certainly, I'll admit it, it comes to me as quite surprising. There are weak characters that really can't cope with very much. There are people that are on the timid side of life, and it very, very, very little flattens them. There are people that don't have broad shoulders, and they're not able to carry great burdens. But you certainly couldn't say that about Moses. Here's a man that has gone into the very court of Pharaoh, that has looked in the very eye, the most powerful man on the face of planet Earth in that era, has stood like a pillar against the fiercest opposition of Egypt. Here's a man that has climbed a mountain and spoken face to face with God. Here's a man that has overseen the construction of the tabernacle. Here's a mighty man, and something has happened in his life that has so overwhelmed his thinking that he said, "I've a far better dead. I've a far better dead." And I wouldn't be surprised that even the thought flitted across his thinking. "It would have been better for me if I'd been washed away in the little ark of bulrushes into the waters of the Nile and crunched by crocodiles than have to live with this." In fact, to be honest, the job that he had, he didn't want it anyway. And when God first invited him to sign the contract, he didn't want to take it. And he said, "Lord, I can't talk, and I can't do this, and I can't do that." And the Lord insisted, "Moses, you're the man to take the contract." And Moses was signed on, if you'll allow me to use that expression, in Exodus chapter 3. It's just a year later. Mind it has gone well. As far as being a successful servant, an honorable servant, a faithful servant, a mighty man of God, that 1 year of service in the contract has gone well. And the Exodus has taken place. But Moses is now so discouraged, he comes back and tells God, "There's the contract back. I'm finished. I didn't want the job anyway. You forced it on me. It has turned out to be so awkward and so ugly. Take it back. And kill me. It wasn't that I'm going back to Egypt." I don't think that ever crossed his mind. He would rather have died at the hand of God in the wilderness than ever to go back to Egypt. He said, "Lord, I'll die amongst your people, but I can't be a leader anymore. The burden of this leadership is just so overwhelming. I cannot bear to carry the burden of all this people and all these problems." He said, "I've had enough." Is there an overseer like not here tonight. You've had enough. Maybe, if it was really being investigated, you didn't really want the job at the start. You didn't angle for it. You didn't push for it. You weren't voted into it. And as you look back on the circumstances of life and the way things have gone, you are in this particular post because the Lord has put you into it, and by the guidance of His Spirit and the encouragement of the brethren, it has landed on your plate, the responsibilities, but they have become so enormous. And you're so convinced of your own inadequacy. Maybe sorry you've taken on the job. Sunday school teacher. You thought it was great when you started out in your service for the Lord. But things have changed. We'll see some of the changes that can come. And you're just about to resign. You see, dear Christians, always remember this. Whatever sphere of life you might be in, maybe it's a parent. You got married out of deep exercise. The Lord has given you a little family. And the service of bringing up a family in this old, dark, dingy world has been committed to your trust. Maybe that service is becoming so difficult and you're becoming so discouraged. The thought has crossed your mind, I might have been better if I'd avoided all of this. And tonight, as you have come to the meeting, and if not tonight, maybe at some point in your life in the past, or possibly some point in your life in the future, you will be so deflated. Deflated by discouragement. That it will be practically and psychologically impossible to think of going on. As you sit here, if things are comfortable with you, you might say to me, well, I know that happens to some people, but I don't think it's my type. I think I'll be able to manage. Well, just don't convince yourself too much, because if it could happen to Moses, a big man like Moses, a great man like Moses, a mighty man like, if it could happen to him and to the others that we'll be mentioning on the other evenings in the will of God, I would say there's none of us immune. At every age, at every stage of life, the black dog of discouragement can invade the Christian's confidence and can leave him terrorized and paralyzed and crippled in his usefulness for God. Can you imagine, I say again, Moses asking God to kill him? And kill me out of hand. It's really a very emphatic expression. Well, I'll try and divide our consideration into three little sections, and I'll promise I'll not be keeping you late. I'll go through it because it's been a very, very compacted weekend. I'll think for a moment or two about the elements of this man's discouragement, the different characteristics of, and the different ingredients that fed in to make him so, the elements of his discouragement. Then I'll move back a little bit. Having looked at the different features of his discouragement that come out in this chapter, in the central part of the chapter, we'll try and see if we can discover the explanation for his discouragement. And then I'll have to come, very importantly, at the latter part of the meeting, to think about the easing of his discouragement. Because even though Moses handed in to God his resignation, God didn't accept it. No, there are leaders that wanted to quit, and God wouldn't accept their resignation, and he wouldn't accept Moses. And he eased the burden. And he told them how to just have things redistributed so that the difficulty might not arise again. You see, the purpose that I have in mind in trying to cover these things is this. You can nearly set it in your thinking as a given that if I take the work of God seriously, missionary work, local testimony, oversight, Sunday school, whatever it may be, if whatever work I'm doing for the Lord, if I take it seriously, you can nearly be 100% convinced at some stage, somewhere along the line, you will have an attack of this very thing. Now, the reason I'm talking about these things is this. This discouragement that can be so paralyzing, there are certain factors that induce it. And if you can identify in your life the factors that might induce it, that will help you to cope with it and maybe to overcome it. And to get out. Some people find themselves so unable to cope with the discouragement that just comes across them like a wave. And they can't identify what has caused it and what has gone wrong. Unfortunately, you may not know any of this in the city of Toronto, any folks like this, but I know folks, and the wave of discouragement has swept across their life like a tsunami, and because they did not know how to cope with some of the factors, they have lain buried. Buried. Beneath the waters of almost complete uselessness for years. And they couldn't get above it. And that's what I'm wanting to think about in these nights. Now, one of the factors that contributed to Moses' discouragement was his displeasure. We have this dreadful outburst. In chapter 11 of Numbers we've been reading, and from verse 11 down to verse 15, there's an outburst which Moses gives to the Lord. Verse 11, Moses says unto the Lord, "Wherefore hast thou afflicted thy servant? And wherefore have I not found favor in thy sight? Thou layest upon me the burden of all this people. Have I conceived this people? Have I begotten them that thou hast charged me with carrying them?" What? How can I give flesh to about five or six questions? Just a torrent. I tell you, when the lid is lifted off, you can just see the whole thing has been building up, and the pressure has been boiling. And in Moses' thinking, and in Moses' heart, for quite a while, there has been a build-up of frustration. And there's something that has happened, we'll talk about it in a moment or two, there's something that has happened that has just taken off the lid of this, and it just spews out, and one question after another flies out in the very face of God, and when he has spewed out this torrent of questions, he says, "Lord, the bottom line is I want to die. Kill them." Now, just before that starts in verse 11, just before that in verse 10 it says, Moses was displeased. And his displeasure spilled over until it became frustration. Now let me speak to you, because it'll become a big subject in a forthcoming night. Temper control. And there are some things that Irish men are not qualified to speak upon. But when it's temper control, I have full qualifications and about 1,000 years of good, hot history to back it up. So that there will be one of the nights when I'll be talking to you about the control of your temper. But we'll just touch on it very briefly tonight. You say, was Moses, should he not have been angry? They made the Lord angry. Look at the verse 10. It says, Moses heard the people so on. The anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. And Moses was also displeased. So God was angry. So it's not always wrong to be angry. God was angry. Moses also got angry. But then, Moses took out a wee bit of his anger on God. You see, there are times that we need to get angry. I feel we're living in a spineless society where nobody becomes disturbed by anything. And we become anemic. And we just accept everything. Moses wasn't like that. But all I say is this, dear Christian. You need to watch that your reaction to other people's wrong doesn't become an overreaction. Now, they're wrong. We're not disputing that. We'll see in a minute or two they were wrong, and they were seriously wrong. And Moses was angry because of their failure. But his anger at their failure became such deep-seated frustration that it put him into failure. And put him into a state where he was saying things to God and questioning God's character and questioning God's dealings with him in a way that didn't seem to befit the great man Moses. I know that, dear believers, many a time they see wrong and they suffer wrong and they see other people's mistakes and they are maybe ill done by. And sometimes Christians can carry an internal sense of anger. And if that is not properly controlled, it can lead to discouragement, such as happened here with Moses. So there was a displeasure that seemed to spill over. Then there was a distortion of the facts. Look, for example, at what he said. I'll go through this very quickly. Moses said, "Wherefore didst thou afflict thy servant?" Had God afflicted him? Sure, God had blessed him abundantly. He says, "Lord, you have done me an awful ill turn, making me a leader of this people." He says, the worst job that a man ever had in the world was to have to lead this bunch. He says, anybody but this. And he says, "You have done me a disservice by making me the mediator of the law, by making me the builder of the tabernacle, by making me the leader of this people." He said, you must have an in for me. See, things are getting a wee bit out of focus. You see what he says in verse number 11. "Wherefore have I not found favour in thy sight, that thou layest the burden of all this people upon me? Have I conceived all this people?" He says, am I their mother? Was I their father? Have I begotten them that thou should say, carry them unto the land? Wherefore should I give them flesh? Who ever said that Moses had begotten the people? Who ever told Moses to give all the people flesh? Who ever laid upon Moses all the burden of the people? Mind you, just before he died, in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 1, I think it is, and maybe in fact another chapter in Deuteronomy as well, you know what Moses said as he looked back upon the 40 years of the wilderness wanderings? He said to God, he said, "You bear them as a father." But he didn't think that here. He says, "Lord, you're making me carry the whole bunch of them, and there's nobody to help me, and I'm carrying it all, and you have just got them out of Egypt, and you've set them on my shoulders, and you've told me to carry them to the land of Canaan, and you've abandoned me." And he gets his... In fact, I didn't count it this morning. I remember counting it a couple of weeks ago. And I think in about five verses, Moses uses personal pronouns 16 times. I have begotten them. Have I conceived them? And I have to carry all this burden. And my people, and my burden. And he becomes so much taken up with himself. Not a recipe for discouragement. Just distorts the whole picture and becomes focused, and he can think about nothing but what I have to do, and there's nobody helping me, and there's nobody supporting me, and even the Lord has let me down. In fact, that's another item that I just mentioned that fed into this discouragement was he's actually blaming God. He said, "Lord, I would never have had these difficulties had it not been for the fact that you interfered in my life. I used to be a happy shepherd, whistling away, keeping a few sheep in Midian. I would have had a happy life only for you." Some of you brethren maybe here tonight, you think of how many cares you wouldn't have if you weren't an overseer. You think of how happy life could be had the Lord not called you to that position. He has done you a disservice, hasn't he? Would he be forced here for leaving you alone? Just letting you be a businessman. Have a happy life. Just letting you be a university professor and enjoy. But making you an overseer with all the spiritual burdens and dumping the whole load on you and saying, you better look after those people. You see, Moses starts now to blame it upon the Lord. And this distortion and this passing of blame to the Lord and this frustration and this displeasure, and then the final ingredient in this awful outburst of discouragement, he says, Lord, I just want to tell you straight. There's no future in this. And he says in verse number 15, if thou deal thus with me, kill me, I pray thee, out of hand, if I have found favour in thy sight. He said, please do me a favour and kill me. He said, I can't go on. There's absolutely no future. Now you need to watch all of that, dear Christian. I don't know the circumstances of each life here. I know that not everyone before me now is an overseer, and I've given that application because this man is a leader. But maybe in your life, maybe there have been times that you have become angry, displeased. Maybe, if I could take away the mask, which I can't do and I don't need to do, I could find that in your heart, somewhere lurking deep down is a grudge against God. In fact, I'm convinced there are some Christians in ill health. Now, not all. Please don't, I don't want to make a blanket statement. Not all. And if you know somebody with nervous problems or somebody ill in hospital, don't even be thinking that Gilliland has diagnosed the sick. But there are some believers with nervous problems, with physical problems, and the root of the problem is a condition that no doctor will ever repair. It's a grudge against God. And they feel themselves angry with God because of what he has permitted in their life. And they feel that God has left them to carry a load that is point blank not fair. And they can't see any future. And they wish themselves to death. I tell you, Moses had some future. The best days were yet to be. He had 40 years. He had 40 years of the faithfulness and the mighty power of God. He would see the borders of the land of Canaan. He had great things still ahead of him. And here's the man, and right now, he just wants his life to be terminated. What about the explanation for this condition? What caused all this? Now don't forget, this is just about a year. I can't put a precise date upon it. This is just about a year after the Exodus. And he was in top form then. And now he's just plunged down, and it has been a year of mighty operations. Now he's plunged down to the very bottom of the valley of discouragement. Well, I would say, I would divide this part of my little message perhaps into two. As far as the explanation is concerned, there were external factors, and there were internal factors. There were things outside of Moses, nothing to do with him. But then there were things wrong inside of Moses, and we need to watch both. Now, as far as the external factors were concerned, the first great problem was the mixture amongst the people of God. You look back, I'm not elaborating on this tonight, but I just have to identify it. In verse number 4 of this chapter, it says, the mixed multitude that was among them fell a lusting. And these were people, they weren't true Israelites. They never had appreciated the blood of the Lamb. But they had joined the bandwagon of the Exodus. And maybe the euphoria of excitement with all the people going, they thought, we'll join in. They had no faith in God. They had no appreciation of the word of the Lord. They weren't thinking about the promised land at all. They just jumped onto the bandwagon. It was the latest fad. This big movement of people. It's the thing to do. But they had no deep. And now that they're out in the wilderness and they have hit the first few difficulties, these people have never really been truly linked in covenant relationship with God. And they're wanting to go back to Egypt. And Moses wants to go on. If you read just at the end of chapter 10, Moses gives that great prayer as the ark goes forward. I think it was one of the great days in Moses' life when the ark made its first journey forward for 3 days, and he gives that great prayer, "Rise, O Lord, let thine enemies be scattered." And when the ark moves forward, you would say, "Oh, I tell you, we'll be in the land of Canaan within a couple of weeks." Do you see that God is marching for? Let's go! Then these people start going back to Egypt. And these professors that didn't really belong to the people of God, and the things they were looking for, and the things they were craving after, and the things they were lusting after, it just broke them up. And he was trying to take the people of God this way. And every time he tried to make a few stages and steps forward, these people were pulling back this way, and they were just a dead weight on progress. It got to them. Still gets to leaders. People that want to go this way, when you're trying to take the people of God in a different direction. The mixture. Well then, of course, in verse number one, it tells us the people complained. Verse number four, it tells us that as well as the mixed multitude lusting, the children of Israel also complained. Verse number 10 says, Moses heard the people weep throughout their families, every man in the door of his tent. This is not now the mixed multitude. This is something amongst the people of God. There was such an outburst of complaining. It was unreasonable. If ever there was a people upon the face of the earth that should have been singing their glad hosannas and hallelujahs to the Lord, it was this people. But instead of the chorus of praise, there are these griping complaints and the fringers. The people on the edge of the camp, and the cringers, and the whingers, and why they could whinge. Every man in the door of his tent, and they all opened it, and they stood out, and every time Moses went out, they were standing with boxes of Kleenex. Just 2 million big crybabies. Are you a griper? Are you a complainer? Listen, you see, if you're just a complainer, you're just a burden amongst the people of God. Forgive me for saying that. You're just a holdback. And the complaining of all these people, whinging about everything, whinging about the place, whinging about the food, whinging about this, whinging about that, and every man in the door of his tent, it was public. They let it all hang out on their sleeve. You know, we live in a day where the least little piece of discomfort, and we make a CD about it. The least thing, you know. If you just don't get the right chair, you'll not be back at the meetings for 3 weeks. And you'll huff and sulk, and you'll sit full of self-pity. And I was in a place, I'll not tell you where it was. And I've been speaking about spiritual gifts and so on, different gifts for different people and so on and so forth. And there was a brother going out through the door. He said to me, "I know what gift I have." I said, "That's good, brother." I said, "What gift?" He says, "The gift of complaining." I could believe him too. I could believe him. It wasn't the Lord gave it to him. Where it came, "Are you the gift of a complainer?" I could nearly tell by some people's countenance. And at worst, it has an awful effect upon other people. My dear Christian friend, if the Lord has saved you by His grace and covered by the blood of Christ and amongst the elect of God to share the throne of everlasting glory, don't descend to be a miserable whinger and complaining and making the work difficult for men that are seeking to lead the people of God. So the mixed multitude and the murmuring of the people of God, well, murmuring even about the manna. Mind you, just in this passage, when they were all complaining about the manna, there's a lovely description of the manna brought in. Because if they had changed, the manna hadn't changed. It was just as sweet and just as bright and just as beautiful for it as ever it had been. And dear people, can I say tonight, if we are not content with a good spiritual Christian diet, it's not because Christ has changed. He's just as appetizing, the glorious Savior, satisfying Christ that he ever was. It's because we have changed. And we are intent on gratifying our Egyptian lusts. And that's it all really wore down. And then, guess what? He started complaining. Now, he didn't complain. Moses didn't complain to the Lord about the manna. Moses complained to the Lord about his job. He said, Lord, they don't like the food. And he said, I don't like the job. And he said, I'm finished because I can't bear any more. Dear brother, might I say to you, don't be giving in. Don't be throwing in the towel. Don't be hanging up your coat upon the peg and walking away. If the Lord has put you in a post, even though there is murmuring, even though there is mixture, even though there are difficulties and problems, may the Lord give you grace just to carry on. Now, that's the external problem. But then, there's an internal problem. I think we have some indications here that just inside things weren't very good with Moses. You know that if you're in good touch with the Lord and in good terms with the Lord, which thankfully happens sometimes, the problems of other people, you can handle them. But do you see, if you're losing ground inside, and if you're not just right internally, you don't have the defense established that enables you to take on those external pressures. And I think Moses had lost a little bit. Maybe there was an emotional problem. It had been a busy year. As I said a minute or two ago, this man had been taken from being a very, very quiet shepherd. I suppose there were days in Moses' life in the 40 years of his shepherdhood when he hardly even saw another human being. He lived a life of pastoral, idyllic peace. Suddenly, his life was just somersaulted. And a man who lived in the backside of the desert in obscurity, he was catapulted into publicity, right down into Egypt. And then out of Egypt with all these thousands of people building the tabernacle, the golden calf, everything. It had been a hectic year of absolutely packed activity after 40 years of quiet. He was a human being, wasn't he? You know, one of the most important things, two things in life that a Christian preacher, overseer, any believer needs to remember is, you need to remember who the Lord is. And you also need to remember who you are. There are times in life we need to remember whom we are, just as human beings. And Moses was emotionally drained. And his internal resources were bound to be depleted. You watch, dear Christian, you watch for a time, if you have a busy time in life, when spiritual energies have been exhausted in concentrated service for the Lord, just after that, you might need a breather. Just to replenish depleted resources, there was an emotional problem. Secondly, I think there was a practical problem. About a year before this now, and this might bring me into a diversity of opinion with some of my brethren. I'm not altogether sure about this, but I'll just make it as a suggestion. About a year before this, Moses' father-in-law told him, he says, you know, Moses, you need to watch here. You're doing too much. He says, all these people are bringing their problems to you. And he said, it'll wear you down. And you'd need to get men to help you. because you can't do all this yourself. Your new job has just become so widespread that you'll have to delegate. That's what his father-in-law told him. Now, some of my brethren here may take that as just a piece of worldly advice. I maybe am inclined, without being dogmatic, I'm inclined to take it as a piece of wise advice. And Moses didn't take it. And here he is a year later. And the burden has become so heavy that he just breaks. Isn't it a pity maybe he hadn't delegated earlier? He has to delegate in this chapter. And he has to spread out the load. Dear brother, it's one great thing that we need to learn in the work of God, that I can't do it all, and you can't do it all, and we need to share. And one of the great safeguards against discouragement in God's service is the delegation of the work. You say, well then, just get rid of it. Just dump it to anybody. No, no. If you're going to, just for example, when the Lord tells him, verse number 16, the Lord said unto Moses, gather unto me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom thou knowest to be the elders of the people, and officers over them. He says, if you're going to delegate, he says, make sure that you give it to men who are able to do it. Men that are recognized. Men whom you know. So that we're not just to delegate in the sense of getting clear, but to make sure that we delegate responsibly. Moses, maybe I'll say this. Sometimes your father-in-law could maybe give you good advice. I'll be careful about that. I'll be careful about that. And we'll keep that in italics and in inverted commas. But these old fellas that are sort of a bit dozy on it, you know, that have lived for 70 and 80 years, and they're not just as sharp in the technological advancement of the 2000s. I tell you, the discipline of life has taught them many things. And over 70 years, many of these men have learned to pace themselves. And I suggest that advice might just be well worth listening to. And it's maybe a pity, a practical problem, an emotional problem. And really deep down, there was really a spiritual problem. And that really comes out. It takes a good while before that comes out. Look at verse number 21. The Lord has been talking with Moses to get him through the problem. And in verse 21, Moses says, would you hear this for a mouthful? The people among whom I am are 600,000. He says, Lord, I've counted them. And you said I'd give them a month of flesh. He says, what are you talking about, Lord? With all the flocks and herds and all the fish of the sea. He says, Lord, you've got a way out of things altogether. He says, you've made big promises. You're going to need all the herds in the world and all the fish of the sea to do what you have said. He says, it's never going to work. And he just says, this is the root cause of the whole business. And it's all out now. It all hangs out in the presence of the Lord. The root cause of it all was this. Moses says, I can't cope with this, and God can't cope with it either. And I'll never manage it. It's too much for me, and it's too much for the Lord. Look what the Lord says in verse number 23. The Lord said, Moses, listen, son, is the Lord's hand waxed short? He says, thou shalt see whether my word shall come to pass or not. He says, listen, take it easy. He said, there's my hand. And he said, there's my word. And he said, you see those 70 men? He says, I'll put upon those 70 men my spirit. He says, Moses, keep who? I'm not taking your resignation. Just keep in your post. Go on. Oh, Lord, I can't go on. I can't carry these two. He says, Moses, don't you worry. You'll not be asked to carry them all. It'll be my hand. And it'll be my spirit. And it'll be my word. And he said, you just learn to depend upon me. And he said, I have the resources, and I have the capacity, and I have the ability. And he said, you don't need to feel overstretched, and you don't need to feel frustrated, and you don't need to feel defeated. He said, you leave it with me, because my hand has all power, and my word can never fail. And he said, my spirit is not... He says, I can give other men gifts. He says, I can give 70 gifts within a crack of my fingers. You know, the Lord could raise up gifts in Langstaff that would excel any that there are, even though there are considerable gifts altogether. Dear brethren, let us not lose perspective. Let us not lose our faith. Let us not jeopardize our future. Let us not lose our focus. Moses' God is our God. And don't be giving up your post. And don't be handing in the towel. And don't be getting overexcited. And God settled the whole thing and eased his burden. Refreshed his spirit. Got him steady. There's maybe a Christian as I close. Maybe somebody today and you have got into a flurry. And what you would really need is just to have a little quiet time with the Lord. You know, there's a little rhyme. If I can remember it all, it says something like this. Talking about Christians getting all frustrated and all worked up and just about to quit. It says, I think in the words, we mutter and sputter. We fume and we spurt. We mumble and grumble and our feelings get hurt. We can't understand things and our vision grows dim. When all that we need is a quiet time with him. Get back to the Lord. Oh, blurt it all out. You know, if some of you employees, if you had an employee come in and give you a blast like Moses gave the Lord, you'd say, that's the door. Get out. You wouldn't employ a man like that. You say, this man not fit for the job. Can't take it. Can't take it. I shouldn't have put, he hasn't the capacity. Look, he's broken. He's cracked. God said, now listen, Moses, I gave you the job. You think it's become a little bit too heavy. He says, just take it easy. Put your trust in me and my spirit and my hand and my word will finish it all. Keep your focus. Now, just before I stop, the Lord had hardly said that. Hardly just done that. And it was all put to the test. There was a bit of a conference, and then there were two boys didn't turn up. You always get boycotting. Two boys staying away. The boycotting is a long road. It's an old job. Been going on for a long time. And they didn't turn up, and they were doing a bit of preaching and so on as well. And suddenly somebody, Moses, 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 there's two fellas over there in competition with you. If they had done that 15 minutes before, Moses would have gone ballistic. He would have flipped over altogether because he could take no more. And this thing was getting spiraling out of control and he could take no more. But now he's had a little time with the Lord. The Lord has regained his focus. His spirit has been settled. He just says to Joshua, he says, don't worry, Joshua. The Lord will look after that. He says, I wish there were far more at the preaching. He says, the Lord will look after that. And just as meek as could be and unruffled and undazed, do you see how much benefit this great man gained from getting his discouragement settled in the presence of the Lord. Don't quit because of pressure. May the Lord encourage our hearts.